It is November 15th, 2010, and we are interviewing a gentleman who has had a long career in the grain trade. So I will just ask him to introduce himself and tell us a bit about how he got started in the grain industry.
My name is Ronald Williamson, and I worked for United Grain Growers for 40 years. And how I got started was, like, I needed a job, went there, and I knew a few of the bosses at that time, and I got hired.
So approximately how old were you at the time you started?
Go back 40 years, 20-something.
1957. My math is not that swift.
It was mine.
So did you, we are currently in Current River. You grew up in Current River then?
Right, grew up in Current River. A couple of the big bosses here, one of the main one was our inspector, Mr. Snowski, but he's dead. Now, he died pretty young. He had one of the brain things in his head. He was 47, and he was one of the guys that got me in because he was an inspector at Grain Growers at that time.
So he was an inspector for Grain Growers
for
the government?
For Grain Growers.
And do you remember how to spell that name?
Chernowski?
Mm-hmm.
T-E-R-N-O-W-S-K-I.
Okay, great.
Something like that.
Yeah, great. So how old were you, did you say?
I don't know. I was 27, something like that.
Okay. If you grew up in this neighborhood, were you familiar with the elevators as you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you see them all of it. Because I just lived over here, too. When I was a kid, I was a block away from here.
On what street was that?
Grenville.
Would the kids from the neighborhood go down to that area? And
oh, yeah, I was. In the old days, and during the war years, everybody up here had chickens. And they used to go down and sweep out the boxcars to get the grain to feed their chickens during the war years. Because in the boxcars, there's always a little grain on the floor left over. And they bring brooms down and sweep it out. And they get maybe two or three bags a day, you know, from all the elevators. And they fed their chickens and up here. Everybody up here in the old days had chickens.
So when the kids went down,
we swept the cars too, when we were kids, yeah. And you know, thing was lugging it back up the big hill. You know, you make sure that you only had certain kinds of pails because you got to bring it up that hill every, you know, climb the big hill every day. But now you can't do that because now it's all tankers. And the empty, they open and close them, and there's no more grain left in when they take them out of the tankers.
And there's not many people raising chickens anymore.
No,
either.
Nobody up here has chickens anymore. No.
So it all worked out.
It worked out. Yeah. But see, like, we had a lot of guys come from the war, you know, from Italy and that. And we try to tell them, you know, like, we never starved here because we had these elevators. And up here, any vacant lots up here, you just dug a garden and nobody said nothing. The city didn't say nothing. The government didn't say nothing. You dug your garden and you planted your potatoes and whatever. And you watered it and weeded it and all you brought it home. And plus a little bit of stuff you got from the elevator and feed your chickens. And you always had something to eat. You had a lot of stews in those days, but yeah, we didn't starve up here.
One of the side lights of the having the elevators close by.
Yeah, because, you know, have them there too, like, mm-hmm. You know. And then during the war years, they had the soldiers down here in the casino grounds here. You know, like just down at, you know, coming in there. There used to be a great big building there called the casino, and the soldiers used to eat in there. And after the war, that building was rented out to from the city to the DC Enterprises. And DC used to have great big meals in there, like for this, any of the big clubs, you know, where 400 or 500 people, he would feed them there. Mm. Plus, he would cook meals here at the casino and take them over to the Coliseum when he had people there that have dinners there, and they made the meals here in the casino and delivered them over in half-ton trucks and those great big heaters for over there. Like, you got your salad first, then you got your meal, and the trucks are running back with the dirty ones, back and forth, you know. It was quite a system DC used mm-hmm. to have.
When you think back to those early days, before you started in the grain industry, but while you were growing up here, I'm familiar with the elevators that are there now. How do they look the same or different from when you were a kid?
Well, some of them they added on. You know, like Richardson's added on, and Grain Growers added on one piece. And, of course, Pool 9 is not there no more. But if you go down and look where Pool 9 used to be, and if you have a picture of Pool 9, and you look at the picture and look at what's there now, 90% of the elevator is laying there on the ground. 90%. Most people don't know, you know. If you see the picture of the elevator, 90% of it, it's right there on the ground.
The foundation then is still in
place.
Yeah,
no, no, they pounded it through. It went right, they pounded the basement in, and the rest of it went in on top of it, and they spread it out. Three guys came there and did that job. One guy had the crane with the big ball, another guy had the bucket machine, and another guy was driving a bulldozer.
When would that have happened? Approximately.
I don't know when they knocked it down. Back in the 70s, I guess, they knocked it down.
And where is Pool 9? In between...
Grain Growers and Pool 4.
Okay.
In between there. Right now, there's kind of a... Grain Growers has like a pellet plant there on part of that property now. But see, what happened is they had a big wooden trestle there, too, for the boxcars. Now, when they knocked that out of there, that's when most of the elevator now is laying where that trestle used to be. And the rest of it, they just sort of spreaded it out. Mm. The only thing they took out of there was the machines, all the metal was gone. They took all that away. And the rest of it is laying right there.
So the rubble is still there. So
all the
shipped away.
Yeah, all the concrete's right there. 90% of the elevator is laying right there. Mm. Most people, you have to see how they did it. And then the crane guy had to swing the ball from the Pool 4 side in so the rocks couldn't fall into the slip because they had boats coming there. So they had to keep hitting it from the Pool 4 side to make it come towards Grain Growers side.
How long would it have taken to dismantle the thing?
3 months it took them, roughly. Hmm. A big black guy from Georgia, wherever he's from, he ran the crane. He's telling us one time they used to knock down big houses in Chicago, knock out whole neighborhoods. And he one night, he was on a night shift. And he says, where do we start? He says, start at the corner one and work your way back. And this, most of the time he tells you how he does it. He drops the ball and just pulls it fast and half the house comes down. This time when he dropped the ball, he's lighting a cigarette. And when he looked up, the lights went on. They didn't buy that house yet. Nobody got hurt, but the boy, he dropped the big ball right inside. They had to buy it then.
I guess so.
He saw us, he said, he says, in my face when that light went on in that house.
I imagine.
Because, well, he figures they're all supposed to be empty. Yeah. Okay?
So if you're a lifelong resident of Kern River then, how old were you when there was the first explosion at Pool 4?
That was about 52, eh?
No, there was one in 45.
Oh, 45? I would have been 12 years old. I remember that one. You know, we'd all come to the top of the hill to see all the all the excitement down there.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember about that?
Oh, this is the fire trucks and all that going down there, and, you know, people running around, especially people that their families worked there from up here, eh? They were, you know, the women were hollering, screaming, they didn't know if their husbands got hurt in it. If you look at Pool 4, on this end, you'll see the concrete roof, you know, in the big workhouse. But if you look on the other end, it's a tin roof. That's the roof that blew up.
Oh, and went straight up in the air.
Well, it
just
kind of went up and came back down again. And, you know, so they had to clear it all up. And they built the tin one after that. Then they blew out, they had no fire escapes at that time when they blew that elevator blew up. That's why so many people got hurt because they couldn't get up or couldn't get down. Again, they couldn't downstairs fast enough. And again, it was in the morning, and they had, that morning it was kind of a warm morning, and they had the heat, a little wind, and some little spark, and it went boom. After it was all done, they had a guy come at the fairgrounds, when the circus used to come to town. He was in there, and he had a big booth, and he had this big cylinder, when he was about this big, and he opened it up, and then there was a spark plug. So he locks it now, and on the top he had a piece of cardboard like this. He put it over the top with a clamp. He said, what we need now is a little air. He had a little thing for air. Blow that little dust. Well, first of all, he put some dust in it. And he pushed the little button to blow the air around. He said, now we need a spark. He blew that big hole in the cardboard.
To says, illustrate what happened.
He says, that's what happened. Hmm. Yeah. There, I'll give you an idea. Boom. Yeah.
Were you at school at the time?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, but after a while, we all came to the top of the hill to... And we'll look at it. Then later on, when actually you go down and take a better look, you know, down along the tracks, you go have another look at it.
Did you know any of the families that were affected?
Well, you know, quite a few of them up here. I knew them, yeah. But most of them, it was the building right next to Pool 9, and that just one big cylinder, the hole where the grain goes in to load the boat, just that one big hole blew out and it fell on the boat. And the same boat was there for both blasts. The boat was called the Baton, owned by Meisner Steamship. And I always thought for a joke, if somebody at, April Fool's Day, to put the order on the desk in the day before, saying, "Refuse screening is on the Baton to be loaded." How many guys would show up the next day if they read the order?
A bad luck ship.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of, for him to come twice and the same thing happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
The elevator blew up.
And when did that second one was in 52? What time of day was that one?
That was what saved everybody because it was closer to noon hour. It was like, say, 11 after 11:30 in there, between 11:30 and 12. And most of the guys by this time come down to eat their lunch. They're heading for the lunchroom. And they were just more or less out of the way. And besides, it was only in the building here. It wasn't on the big buildings, the one cylinder. So it was wasn't that really bad. How many people got hurt, I can't remember. But just thing fell on the boat.
Yeah, I think there were about seven killed.
Seven killed in the second one?
Mm-hmm.
That's a saved a lot of them because it was closer to dinner time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And where were you at that time?
At Green Course. We heard the boom. First of all, we didn't know what the heck it was, eh? And then when we started to realize what it was, all we had to do was, like, you see the picture there of Green Gorge here?
Mm-hmm.
Where is it? This one here? Right here? So all we see, we're in here, eh? All we did was come down to here, like, these two openings here, and cross our tracks and go take a look. Through Pool 9, you go through Pool 9, you can see, walk over mm-hmm. to Pool 9 here, and then you can see the big hole that it made.
So you were pointing to the two gaps between the storage silos and the workhouse.
Yeah, but then we just came out from there, and crossed over the Pool 9's right here and over to Pool 9. And just
did you feel the explosion?
Oh, yeah, you felt it a little bit. Like even when this Green Gorge fell, one piece and a middle piece and an end piece. And when ships would come in to dock and upstairs, if you're up in the annex upstairs, you'd be sitting there and you knew the boat was at the dock. Because when he hit the building, the building would move a little bit. And you knew he was there, A few times I told the guys, the boat's at the dock. He said, there's no boat there, because I just looked out the window. I said, go take a look. And they looked, how did you know? Because I could feel, I knew when you feel the building, it shook a little bit, when he hits it. He bumps the dock, and he moves a little wee bit.
Be quite a bump because those buildings aren't tiny little structures.
No, but but you knew he was there because it would shake a little bit. You'd feel it.
So, did you say that you were there at the time that the part of the elevator fell over?
I was working there, but there was only two guys in the building when it fell over at 8 o'clock at night, roughly. It was a watchman and a guy named Bill Pepler. And Bill Pepler was upstairs, and the watchman was downstairs. He had to use the phone. Out of the window, he would have been dead. But he had to make this phone call because some relatives were coming. So he went back, came downstairs, and he was on the phone. And he didn't even know it went. It had fallen. It hardly made any noise at all. It just slipped into the harbor. And Bill Pepler was looking out the window because he was having lunch. And he, he could see what's going on. He was looking down almost at the water, And what was happening was when the belts pulled, up in the attic belts pulled, it was pulling the big workhouse part with it until they snapped. And they have these little clickers where they joined the belts. Once they broke, then the building came back again and just that part went along.
So the silos went in the lake?
Just the silos went.
And the workhouse righted itself?
Yeah, it came back again, yeah. Pepler was there. And he, being how he is, he went and shut everything down, the power off to all the machines and that, and then he came downstairs, down the stairwell we have. And the watchman, then the bottom, he didn't even know it. He told him, he said, we've got to, they went and took a look, and it was gone. It was laying in the water.
So did it fall towards the
shipyards?
Towards the shipyards?
Yeah, it just sort of slid in, and all they did then, when it went in, it just pushed the water. A big wave, like a tidal wave. And it's just everything over there just had buried in water over there. Did a lot of damage. It filled up the dry dock, knocked the building over there. There was another building there too where they made wooden minesweepers. I don't know if you don't remember those. After the war, they made these wooden, out of wood and aluminum and minesweepers or something, or whatever they called them, I don't know what they were for the old country. And pushed a great big hole in the building, moved that building to. And down here at the end of the river, we had Abitibi, knocked all the logs. Like they have a big thing there for fixing their rafts. you know, the boom logs for fixing the rafts. Knocked some of the big logs right through a half-ton truck there. They did a little bit of damage to them.
What year was that, do you recall?
58.
So, and you said you'd started at...
No, 55, 57, 50. And then, yeah, which is kind of lucky for everybody, you know. And a lot of damage, you know. Money-wise, there's millions of dollars in damage. But the insurance company, they got their money back because they covered it up right away with the stuff, felt, you know, that paper stuff, you know, so it doesn't get wet.
Mm-hmm.
And then up on the top, because the tracks were still there, and then they pushed boxcars in there, and they have those little screw things to pick up grain.
The augers?
Augers. And they got a lot of their, what they really was interested in was in the flax at that time. They got a lot of their flax back, you know. Their loss wasn't that big once they start taking it back, you know.
So, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but if I'm imagining that the silos sort of just moved over, and were they on their side?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
And so when they went to salvage the grain,
okay, it would be like this, right?
Right. Then
this would be the silos. Then you just knock the concrete out and stick your thing in there and just see what you can get. They got a lot back. They did a lot. Then they took the silos and scrap it out to dump somewhere. And you know, they brought all the concrete and the cranes, and they just haul it away with trucks.
So how did they?
It fell in 58, and they were loading. They were loading boats in 61, May of 61. So 58, 59, 60, 61. Not even 3 years, roughly.
And how did they demolish the silos?
With a bucket, with a ball. Break that up with a ball and cranes. So the top part was pretty good, you know, because there's a lot on the top, and you know, and then when they got that going down to the bottom, they had to sort of just guess where it was. But they got it all.
And so the elevator was shut down.
Oh, yeah.
for that time period.
Because you couldn't get a boat in there because it was blocking.
Right.
Yeah.
Ian, do you have any other questions about the incidents before I move on to?
No.
No.
Move along.
Okay.
What incidents?
The incidents of like the two explosions and the and the silos. So let's go back to where we sort of started this, which was when you first started. Now you said you started in when you were about 27.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
So was this your first big job to be working in an elevator?
Oh yeah, the first big one. But I worked at shipyards for a while, you know, when they're building. I worked on Sir James Dunn, and one other, I watched a few launches when they made the old boats in the old days there. I was on a couple there. Then I worked over in the mill for a little while, down here in this, down the mill, and I didn't like that. And then Mr. Tanowski was talking to him, he says, oh, they're going to hire for the summer months, come on down, and I went down, I got hired, and that was it.
So what was your first job when you started with the elevator?
I was a sampler. The sampler is... when they dump the boxcar, you have a machine, a little thing that picks up so amount of grain. And there's two buckets. One the government guy gets and one the elevator gets. And you take it up and show the inspector, you know, and he inspects the one for you. And just looking at it, he puts it in a little can about this long, you know, about like this, about like that, about like this. Little can. And he writes
8x4x4?
Yeah, just a little thing.
Yeah.
And he writes the name, the number of the car, and he puts it on the shelf. You know, there's a date on it, and he puts it on the shelf. And they keep it for about 3 months, and they have a whole bunch of shelves, you know. And as they go along, they empty the old ones out and just put the new ones as they go along. And if there's any question about farmers, any question about the car, and he figured he had a better grade than what we said, they take the can, and they put it down, and three guys come at three different times. One guy looks at it, shakes it up, and does what he does, and he writes what he thinks it is. The second guy comes, mixes it up again, he does his, and the third guy comes, and whatever the two out of the three say, that's what it is.
Did you...
You don't get to happen too often.
No, I wouldn't think so. Yeah. When you say the three guys come, would they all come from the Grain Commission then?
I don't know where they come. But Willie Tanowski, he had such good eyes, it was unbelievable how good his eyes were. He put down a car, and when they were standing... and we go there, and we're looking at it, you know. What bugs, you know? So he had this pencil, he said, look, there's one. Another one here. We still didn't, you know. He says, hold it. And we have a flashlight with a magnifying glass on it. Then he put it on there. He says, see, there's one. And then we said, well, that was on the ticket. You know, he showed us the ticket. Nothing on the ticket. Then he had to go next door and tell the government guys that there's bugs in that car. They didn't even see it.
Hmm.
But his eyes were so good. That he could be back pretty far and he could read the blackboard. You know, he could tell you, you know, what was written on the blackboard. And the circle's only about this big. You know, and he's pretty far back. And he said, you better walk right up to the board to see it. And somebody says, well, he memorized it. I said, that's a lot of memorizing, all them boards, you know. But he had great eyes. And the government guys that come now, they really appreciate him because he could see all this stuff, like, eh? You know, with his eyes. So he was really good at it. The company appreciated him, too, because he was really good. He made big money for the company. Like, whatever it was, like, if it was, say, a 3, it's better than a 3. You know, he knows this. And it's in between the 2 and the 3, so he'll give it the 2, give the farmer a little bit more money on the deal. He was, Willie Tolanowski, he made the millions when he was the inspector. Then he got to be a super after a while.
Who was the superintendent there when you first started?
One of the McKays. I think his name was George McKay. That would be Stan McKay's uncle. But Stan's father was the first superintendent. Then came George McKay. And then after a while came... Stan was super for a while. And it was Dan Smith, another old Scotchman, Dan Smith. He was one of those sergeant majors from the war, you know, and very nice man, you know. But every time you talked to him, you had to say, yes, Mr. Smith, and no, Mr. Smith. We kind of respected him, you know, because he's such a nice man. And anybody that we wanted to get hired on, you know, we tell him what to do. When he comes out of the garage, he'll stand there and just remember to say, Mr. Smith. And every time you say something, tell him, you just do that. And they do that, and they'd follow him up to the office, and they'd be standing there, and we'd come in sometime, and he says, nothing's happening. And we said, did he say anything? No, stick around. And finally, he'd come on back, and he'd say, you're still here? Well, we guess we better hire you. So he'd get the stuff, you know. But he was kind of a funny man, too. Like, you know, what we tell the guys, don't go until he tells you, you know. And he'd come back, he'd see you, and then he'd hire you.
So don't go till you're dismissed.
Yeah, that's right. But he was a good man. No, he was a very good man. You know, if he gives you heck, you know, 2 minutes later, you say, how's the family? You know, he was one of the best people ever met him. You know, how good he really was. We had government guys like Wilf Longy, and Wilf. They had Patrick's Day or whatever it is for the Scotsman, Burns Day, whatever it is.
Robbie Burns Day.
And they would be fixing this tie, tying the Windsor knot, and he'd go hit him in the face with it and bring it up, you know, my throat for wherever he was going. They'd always sing to him, and you know, they'd come in and sing Scotty songs to him, and you know, when Burns Day would come along, and he'd say, I'm glad it's only once a year.
So was this the elevator then where a lot of people spoke Gaelic at one time?
Oh, when I started, they all spoke Gaelic. Oh, yeah, they were all Gaelic guys there. The first guy that wasn't a Scotsman or, you know, from out of the class was Mike Jeremiah. He was a Ukrainian. He was the first one. And he came from school, like, you know, and they hired, you know, and they were hiring, so they hired him. And his friends would say, Mike, where you got a job? And he says, yeah. And they said, where? And he said, Gringoires. And they all laughed at him, you know. How you really work down there with all the, you know. But they all laughed. They didn't really know that he was that they hired him, you know, and he was the first one that wasn't the Scottish or Gaelic. He was one of the first ones that didn't come from the old country. We got a couple of pictures. I don't know if you know, in the old days, the people came on the train, they had tickets on them. And we had a few like that. And there's one guy that looked like one of our bosses. And they had a big picture up there, you know. They said, see that? He came as freight. You know, but it wasn't him in the picture, but the guy looked like him, more or less. And so all the Scotchmen came over as freight. You know? And there's something else they used to do. They used to go to Ogilvy's elevator and buy oatmeal, buy the great big bags of oatmeal. And they would ship them from Ogilvy's elevator to Scotland cheaper than they could buy that in Scotland. Hmm. Now, that's hard to believe. You know, ship, they're going to say, 5 or 6 bags of oatmeal from here to Scotland, and they would get it. And that, even with the freight, it was cheaper than they could buy it in Scotland. Les Green used to have a name for the Scotsman. And he called them oatmeal savages.
And who was Les Green?
Well, he was one of our inspectors, too. You know, he was only working on the scale floor. He was like a big comedian, you know, one of our, you know, comedians. And And we had like a Ukrainian guy there, and he always, when he ate and cooked stuff, he used a lot of garlic. And if something went wrong, he'd go on the radio and say, "Garlic snapper, get up here, I want to talk to you." Because he used to eat lots of garlic, this guy. And he called him the garlic snapper, "Get up here, I want to see you." Whatever was wrong, he wanted to talk to him.
Did the fact that most of the hiring was Scottish people, did that create difficulties?
No.
And when the hiring opened up a bit, was that a deliberate opening up of it?
I'm more or less, I think, I don't know, I, you know, they just, you know, they just switched over, and, you know, when they needed people to come in for the summer months, I see that in the summer months, a lot of young kids used to come in from school. They hired a lot of school kids, you know, the guys that work with us, and their school kids coming in, you know, have money so they go to university. Even though McKay used to come, Murdoch, and his father, you know, was a superintendent, you know, he had a lot of money to be a lawyer. A couple of guys were pilots after. A couple of guys were chemical engineers, you know. And they were always on what we call the manure gang, you know, because they cleaned up everywhere. Because on the roof, you had all this muck on the roof, and they had to clean it up every year. So, you know, clean the elevator up. And little super one time, the guy's boss from Winnipeg came down. He says, "You know, on my manure gang here," he says, "I got more brains in my manure gang than you have in your whole office up there." But sure, because a couple guys were chemical engineers, a couple guys were dentists, a pilot, you know. He said, "I got more brains in my gang here than you got in your whole office up there." Which is true.
Yeah. No, the elevators provided a lot of summer employment.
Grain growers are really good for that. Yeah. Hmm. You have there's a guy here in town here, he's a chiropractor. I forget what his name is. And he was related to one of our supers there, and he's a chiropractor now. Couple of guys with doctors, the judge here, Cisco, mm-hmm. or Cisco, I think his name is, and his son worked with us, and he's a doctor. So, you know, we had a variety of kids that came through the elevator that got the, you know, went on, because they needed that money to, you know, for school.
And the pay was good.
Oh, for there, yeah. Hey, they got good pay, you know, for the time that they're, plus you work the Saturdays with time and a half, and if you get in on the Sundays, well, you get double time, you know. So they were doing all right. Mm-hmm. Plus, they weren't paying no taxes because they got their money back, you know, because they don't need a school.
Because they weren't, that's that right. was the, they right. were right. making a lot of money for a short period of time,
right.
so their annual income wasn't.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You know, so they did all right. A lot of kids did all right.
So if we go back to your career then, you started out sampling.
Right.
And then what happened, how long did you do that, and where did you move to from
there? A couple of years, and then they switched us into they had a system that if you're on the downstairs, you stayed downstairs. If they got you to go upstairs, then you stayed upstairs. Like if you went, they took you up to the scale floor, they more or less kept you up on the scale floor, and there's some machines like under there that they kept you there. If that was a busy, you were down there, or else they put you out into the annex, where the grain goes in the holes. I happened to be in the basement where I took the grain out of the holes. But then in the winter months, I had to go up in the annex to put the grain in the holes because everybody was bucking, changing because of the seniority. And I always went upstairs, but they wanted me to stay downstairs on the machines down there. And I said, no, because if I'm down here, you're going to want me to go down in the basement and help the other guy because he doesn't know. If he doesn't know, why is he there? So I go upstairs so they won't bother me to come downstairs. The time I shut everything off to come downstairs, every time he'd want me to, you know, they didn't want that, so I'd stay up. Because we try to tell them, leave the guy that's down there alone. He knows what he's doing. If the other guy comes and he's going to have big spills or something, you know, that's the company's fault. Because the guy doesn't know the job. He's just there because he's got the seniority, but he doesn't know what to do. You know, so I always went up, let him handle it. Let him figure it out, you know. And a lot of times they had big messes, you know, and they still didn't listen to because of the seniority stuff. Then after a while, they switched it. They give you what they call a position job. You got a position, and you stayed in that position. They couldn't bump you out of your position. Even if you had more seniority, you still couldn't get you off your position job.
So before that, then, was it seniority would move people into positions even though they weren't trained for that
position?
That's
right, because when they laid off in the fall time, everybody wants an easier job, trying to figure out where he could go. And then whatever left over of the poor guy on the bottom, that's where he had to end up. But they'd want him to come over there. But if the pay, they say there's a little difference in pay, he said, "You going to pay me?" They say, no, then he doesn't have to go. Because that's a higher job, a higher rate. So he doesn't have to go and show you.
doesn't have to move then.
No, yeah, it doesn't have to even show you because it's a higher rate.
I'm not quite sure. Okay. By what you mean show.
Well, to show the guy, say the guy doesn't know something.
Oh, you don't have to train the other person.
No, because it's a higher rate and you got a lower rate. You don't have to go unless they pay you that rate, you know. Hmm. I ran into that a few times ago. It was like 10 cents. It's a difference here of 10 cents. And when, especially the guy that pulls the boxcar, he gets 10 cents more. And they said, well, only two guys that get, only one guy gets the 10 cents because he's the foreman, you know. I says, when I'm pulling the cars, what's the foreman doing? You know, he says, nothing. Who's pulling the car then? I am. Why come I'm not getting the same pay? He said, he's doing the same thing I am, but he's the foreman. I said, you got two annex men up there. Does one guy get more than the other? And they said, no. I said, you got two tunnel men down here. Does one guy get more than the other? And they said, no, they do the same jobs. Yeah, I do the same job, I should get 10 cents. They wouldn't give it to me, I said, get somebody else. And this went on for a long time. They used to get mad at me for that. I said, it's only 10 cents, you know? Why are you getting mad? Just pay the 10 cents and everybody's going to be happy here, you know? Then they had to get somebody else. Huh? A few times, a couple things happened, like even when Murdoch was there, they put this other guy on that job and he started pulling the cars. He didn't go and check the brakes on the cars and all the brakes were on. Put the cable on, snapped the brand new cable. He says, boy, my 10 cents must look pretty good now, eh? Because they had to get another cable, shut down, pull off that old one, get a brand new one, fix it all up, you know. I said, well, how much it cost for that? You know, I only wanted 10 cents. Murdoch used to look at me sometimes, you know. I said, I would have checked the brakes first, Murdoch, you know.
So you worked under how many superintendents, would you say?
Oh, lots of them. Okay, the last one I want to see, who was there the last time I was there? Gertola. You know, the singer, his brother, Gertola. And before him, it was Willie Tarnowski, Stan McKay, two George McKay, Dan Smith, a couple more in there. There's a couple more other guys in there. Mm-hmm. Antoniak, Robert Antoniak, he was another one. He was the super there. Mm-hmm.
How would you describe differences in management style? Were they all pretty much the same, or?
Oh yeah, yeah. They more of a, you know, they knew you knew the job. They knew what you're supposed to do. They all knew. They knew what you're supposed to do. They just left you alone. Like when bins filled up, they knew that you knew that you had to fill this up at a certain time. You know, before a boat came, you had to do a lot of things before a boat came, and you know the boat was coming, so you had to fill these machines up and take the bins out. So make sure that he had lots of room while we were loading the boat. Most of and grain, especially grain gores. One thing didn't interfere with another thing. They could dump cars, load boats, and nothing interfered with one another. And when you're cleaning it, nothing, one thing didn't interfere with the other one, more or less. Eh?
So you could do things together.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to stop one operation to start
something
another.
Something would be a little hold up maybe if you're running up onto the belts in the annex. Because we only had six belts. You had seven cleaners and three receivers. And if something had to go somewhere, something might have to get held up a little bit until one guy's finished with one, you know.
So I may have forgotten, but once you left the sampling, you finished sampling after about a couple of years, and then where did you go?
I went into the tunnels in the basement.
Into the tunnels. So what happens in the tunnels?
Well, when the boat comes, they give you an order, and you go down, you open the bins up, and the grain goes up to the scales. And when the bin goes empty, you tell them it's empty, you open another one. They have a system how you're, all the bins on the outside can only be taken up by one belt. Okay, like, you know, so you got three belts in the basement. Certain bins can only be done by this belt and this belt. And this other belt here can,
in the middle.
He can do either side. Oh. You know? So if you got an inside bin, say a bin here, that this belt here could also get it. So you open up one side here and the other side for this guy. And instead of having two bins on, you just zip this one out fast because you got the two belts taking it out at the same time. So it's coming down pretty fast, you know?
What can go wrong there?
Oh, scale plugs up. It doesn't drop it fast enough. Plugs up everything. Grain goes all over the place. Stops everything. Jams it all up. For all the years that they had the elevators, and they have these jam ups, and the horn blows. They have a horn that blows. He has to shut the scale. Tell you to shut off right away because he's got no room for it. You know, it's just running around now in the lake. And you shut off quick because he has little running room for you, you know, to clear that belt. But if it plugs up, Then you had to go down the basement and pull out this kind of a big slide. And there's a big hole there. And you had to go in that little hole and shovel all that up under the floor. You had to take all that grain from the top. Bring all that grain that's in that lake. You had to shovel it all out onto the floor. And this went on for a long time. So finally we got this one boss, you know, Stan McKay. And we said, Stan, why don't we put a little hole right here, you know, in the lake, right here. And put one of the little slides there. One on each side. You just open them. Put a little board here, and that grain would just run out. Just run. Wouldn't have to shovel it. Good idea, he says. Got the guy to cut the little holes. You open the little slides, and the grain just runs out. That whole thing from the top floor, all that grain comes down, and it just runs out. And all you got to do is sort of push it around a little bit to get till it stops. Then this little part on the bottom, that slide, then you put that come out, then you only had about this much to shovel out. Didn't take you about 4 minutes.
So the grain that came out...
It just ran on the floor.
Yeah. Ran on the floor.
Yeah, then so, you picked it up later.
Okay.
You know, it didn't take long to pick it up after. Mm-hmm. But it was to get the thing empty so you can continue to get going again. You know?
What would cause a scale to clog up?
Well, whatever they're doing, they couldn't... He fills up the scale. Then he shuts it off and it goes into a garner. Like, well, you got two of them. You got a scale and a garner. Mm-hmm. They both hold the same amount of grain. So when the grain comes up, it goes through the garner into the scale. Now, if the scale fills up, he can shut it off. Now he can fill up the garner. And when the garner fills up, a horn blows, and he tells you to shut off because he has enough time to clear all the belts. You know, then he has to wait for something. Whatever's wrong, then he can start dropping it fast. Like when they had, in the old days, when they had the boats here in the old days, they had this lever that when they opened the scale out, they would run into the shipping bin, onto the boat, that they could do this so fast. You know, it ran out so quick that they used to put the cleaners on, like two, say you have two cleaners on the downstairs that were doing wheat at the same time, they would be on that scale also. You'd be running from the basement and then cleaners also would be coming up, going into there. So you had also had those going into the scale. In the sky and the scale, so you still had to wait because it wasn't coming up fast enough. Everything's going because when he opened that lever, he put it right to the floor, and that grain would go out faster than you can bring it in.
Hmm. And that changed.
Off, and yet now you have to run out to the annex again because they put those along the outside of the elevator. You got all those pipes way out there on those, like out here. They got all the out here. They got a bunch of pipes out here now.
Okay.
On the water side.
They're like shipping bins
in here.
Okay.
And all the grain went from here, it ran along the belt out to here, and it went down here into the boat. But they could move the things on the top here. They could move these things up here, and the boat didn't have to move. Mm. The boat just stayed there. They would move the, up here, they move the thing up in here, they move that, and they catch the next hole. Like, the grain growers, if you have a boat with six holes, you could put, we only had four legs, but you could load four holes at one time. Mm. And with four different grains, like flax, wow, wheat, and whatever. You could load four of them at the same time.
So you on the belt floor at the bottom, then you would be
whichever one
responsible.
Because you have another guy takes care. So two guys in each end, mm-hmm, each guy has one, and they tell you which one they want you to run on. You know.
What was it like working in the basement all the time?
It was good. It was good, you know, because you had to sweep up too. Like, you know, if any grain, sometimes the grain sprinkles out onto the floor, you had to sort of sweep it up, throw it back on the belts. It was a good job. I love it. You're not really at work. You stand around and watch machines go, you know, you make sure everything runs right. You know, you keep watching this and then watching that. Then in the fall time, when it snowed, and sometimes the snow would blow in the windows, then you had to shovel it all off the belts. She got it all right.
Okay. So when it was snowing?
The grain, the snow would come inside. You'd have to move the belts just a little bit and push the snow off onto the floor because it gets caught in the pulleys and the belt will slip. Mm. You know, it will slip in the pulleys. Like, and you have to take it all out. You have to get shovel off the snow off the belts. Mm-hmm. Like even when it's really cold, say 20, 30 below, and you grab the belt and they say now, and he hits the motor in. And you sort of pull it, everybody starts to pull it. Then once it'll just crawl. And then it doesn't take, once it starts to crawl, it will eventually start to go because it's slipping on the pulley. Mm. But then they have like a spray stuff, you know, like a
silicone?
Silicone or something. They spray on that tail head pulley, and then once it starts to grab, then, you know, mm-hmm. then you let them warm up for 10, 15, 20 minutes, let them just run, mm-hmm. and let them warm up, but then after that, away you go again.
So who taught you the work down in the
guy
in the basement?
Was, the other guy that was there.
Who was there at that yeah, time, remember yeah, his yeah. name?
Peter Solinsky. He was the guy in my end. And the other again, there was Jack Husky was in the other end. He taught the guys in the other end. Well, after a while, you can see. It's the same thing on both ends. Just still, you know, just in your opposite ends. Because both buildings, the original first buildings were exactly the same anyway. So it was the same idea, just different numbers. That's all. You know, mm-hmm. the numbers just changed. That's all.
Was there ever a situation where the wrong stuff went into the...
Where is this? I'll give you an idea what happens then. It depends how much went in. Here, where is it? Let me see which one it is. There it is here. This is Richardson's. See this thing right here?
Yes.
That's a leg.
Yes.
The boat pulls up like here, right here.
Mm-hmm.
And say you dropped in five boxcars too much. You could bring the boat over here, and this leg here would suck it up.
Oh, so it...
No, it's got a thing there. You know, the leg was...
Like a vacuum.
No, a leg. It's a... They have a big piece of metal, mm-hmm. right? Inside that piece of metal, there's a belt. And on that belt, you got buckets. The little buckets. And they would... The thing there would stick it into that hole, and that buckets would start to go around and take it back.
Were this the same... So these were different than the chutes that were delivering the grain.
Yeah, Richardson's had the only one here in town that could take it out.
So you had to send the ship over?
To take it out, yeah.
Oh.
Am I?
No, I mean at your place.
Oh, yeah, but it happens, though. You know, it happens. You know, guys push the wrong button at the wrong moment, eh?
Mm-hmm.
The grain goes in the wrong place. It happens.
So how long did you stay on that job in the...
Always.
Always.
And I always ended up in the, I was always left in the basement. But then again, I was a dryer guy too. In the wintertime, we learned how to run the dryer.
So tell us a bit about running a dryer.
Well, the grain comes in wet. You know, they have a moisture content. So they know how much moisture is in the thing from the sample. They have a thing that, you know, tests the sample. So they know how much moisture is in it. They know how much moisture is in the grain. In the sample routine. Now, they run it up into the dryer, and they'll say that there's so much moisture, so they set the dryer at, say, 110. So you set her at 110, and then it's in there cooking. They get 110, the hot air is just blowing in at it, 110. You'll say for 2 hours, and then it's moving, and they use 2 hours, so you put a little line, you know. So when it gets real close to the line, you say, then I'll bring the sample up. So you take a kind of an average sample of all the little holes they have, and you bring it in. And he'll look at it, and he'll say, leave it for another 20 minutes. You know, so you leave it for the next 20 minutes, and then they'll take it out of there. You know, you want to wash them around the corner. they would say 20 minutes, and then you ran it up for them, you know. And we had two dryers. So we could dry two different kinds of grain at the same time. You can do two of them at the same
Sounds
time.
A little bit like baking.
Yeah, well, yeah. But then you knew the dryer was running because you look outside, there's nothing but steam coming out of it. You know, you get just a big cloud of steam coming. You know, that's from the heat. And where this big fire thing is, right? You start the fire thing up, and it's just in there, say it's at 100 and 200 degrees in there, and you're on this side of it, you'll freeze. You'll freeze where you're standing. Hmm. And yet you're just on the opposite side. Because it's sucked on the other side, it's warm, just you know, a few feet away. And yet, where you are, you'll freeze, and it's warm on the other side there.
During the time that you were working, how were those dryers?
Steam. They had steam in the old days, before I got there. They were steam dryers. They had a big furnace, and they threw the coal in the furnace, again, like you do for your house. And the hot air from the heat in your house, that's how they did it in the old days. But after a while, they had the big blowers from oil, big oil blower. They could have an oil stove blowing the hot air in. But the old days, they had to heat up a boiler, and the boiler would throw in the hot air, just like you do for your house. and the hot air would. The Bangors, they still have their old pipes down the basement. If you look, you can see all the old pipes that they had there for that. The Bangors even had a washer. They used to wash grain at one time.
How's that work?
Don't know. But I know how we knew about it. He told us how it worked, you know. They put the grain in there, and they would wash it with water somehow, and then they would take it from the washer into the dryer and dry it again.
So what?
I don't know why they would wash it. I never understand.
Chemical residue, maybe?
Could be. Could have been that, yeah. Why they would wash it in the old days, but they had a washer there. Tito was the only guy that knew how the whole building worked, you know.
Is that his first name or his last name?
Oh, that was his nickname. His name was Graham. But he was one of those old Scotchmen. We always called him Tito. And he knew everything about the whole building. Everything. We had the old wiring system in there. It's like when you push a button to start up anything, and you push a button, it starts right, the motor starts it. Not then, in the old days there. You had this lever. You push the top so it would get out of the lock. Then you had to push it one way, and just, and then you pulled full blast, then would run. You had like a little kicker starter. Then you had to pull it the other way. So they got rid of those because they figured out a spark so that you can keep going, then, and then get it going, you know. You didn't have to have guys to pull it because it was just one thing that you would have. Eh? This way you could sort of jerk it. Eh? I always thought they were great, you know. If it wasn't for the dust, it would be perfect. I mean, if you had somewhere where it was really cold, this was a great gadget for that. You know, to give it a little kickstart.
Because it wouldn't freeze up.
It wouldn't freeze. So then you could get it going again. You could only give it so much power, then you could stop it. So much power and stop it. Then when you had it running, to keep it going, they just pull it the other way quick, and then it ran. It ran full blast.
Sort of sounds like our chainsaw.
Yeah.
And the choke.
Yeah. Same idea, more or less. A lot of things in the old system was really good. You know, it worked really darn. It's unbelievable how it worked, you know, and it was good. And grain growers had the dumpers right from day one. They had dumpers, not the elevator shoveled the grain. You know how they shoveled the grain? You knew that about the cable? The two guys, one guy goes into this end of the car and he starts to come out, then this guy goes, you know how that works, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We never had those. We had one of those, but we only used it for these partition cars. A partition box car is that they put the grain doors in. Okay, before the grain doors go in, they put sacks full of grain. So right behind one side, one of the doors. This is sacks full of grain, okay? And then they put the grain doors in. Now, where them sacks are, they shoot the grain over the sacks to fill up that end of the car. Now you got like two grades, say flax in the sacks, and they shoot wheat over the top. Then they turn the spout in this end and put, say, oats in this end. So when you open the doors, you got to take the oats out first, you know, then you take the doors out, then you take the oats out, then you had to take the sacks out. And once you emptied all the sacks and piled them out, then you took the wheat up. And we used to get maybe, we had a little siding track there, and we would get maybe four guys, like four cars there. And the guys that were, you know, but it took you all day to do it, you know, because you had this, once you got it into the hopper, you had to wait for the dumper to stop, and then you had to run your hopper. And then the dumper would go again, then you had to take your sacks out. And then once you did that, then stop the dumper again, and then took the sack stuff up. Then you had to shovel this out. And in the meantime, the dumper kept going. And then they stopped the dumper until they ran that out. Then you had a bunch of cleanup. Then you run that car out. Then you bought up the next one. You're there all day. You did two in the morning and two in the afternoon.
Hmm.
So you had two guys.
Very labor intensive, that
yeah,
one.
But you had two nasty guys. So the bosses figured were nasty. Get over there, you know.
Your punishment for
punishment.
Treat me nicer next time.
That's right. You know, you listen to it. You don't have to go there. And then, like the wooden doors in the old days, if you had the shovel houses, you had to cut the doors with an axe. You know, because the grade behind there. So how are you going to get them doors? So you had to cut a hole. Eh? Then over the years, the bottom door, they put a big piece of cardboard to make a window, big window. That you just had to cut the cardboard with the knife, and then all the grain from behind. They didn't have to worry about that because of the dumper. The dumper had arms, big arms there, that would hit the door in the bottom, with the big spikes would go into the door. Now the guy would push the doors like in. Now once he started to push them in, the grain now would run out the hole. And where he was sitting, he could see over the top. you know, how far down it's going, how far down it is. And he lifted it up a little bit more, and more would run out. As soon as he couldn't see it anymore, he just lifted it right to the ceiling. Now, the doors are now stuck up in the ceiling, between the ceiling and his machine, and that's where the door is up. Now, over here on this thing, he's got a big arm here. He puts that into the car. Now, he lifts the car up in the air this way, and all the grain in here hits this arm and goes down into the hopper. And after a while, he gets it up there no more. He brings it down, takes this arm out, and over here, he's got another arm. It goes in this way, and up comes this end, and all the grain there goes up. Brings it back down, and he puts this one, and goes up. And then when he puts this one in, the car's empty.
So those are the dumper cars,
yeah.
Then?
Yeah, that's how we dumped them.
Yeah, and that was...
CDL. He's, Hal built the whole thing. CDL built the whole elevator. Yeah. And then when you're done, and when you take the arms out, the door stayed in the car. Mm. They never came out. They just stayed right in there. Then they had down the railway, had these, what they call doormen, that had to take all those doors out, the nails out, any broken ones, they had to take them out, and then repaired them with other boards. And they, every so often, they had all these boards piled up outside down this the end of the elevator. Then the railway would send put a boxcar there and send about 10 guys there to put all them doors into those cars to send them all back out west again.
Although I understand a number of doors found their ways other places.
Oh, yes, yes. Chicken coops and whatever. Oh, yes.
Back to those chickens.
Back to those chickens and whatever, little dog houses or whatever, yeah. We had a man up the street here at the corner house. From the corner there to this great kind of a big apartment house sort of here, there's three other houses there now, but there was nothing there. This one guy had all of that, plus another lot, two home at night from the midnight shift. He always looked to see if he could find the CP small doors. And he took them apart, and in the fall time, he leveled off to his big garden there, and he put up this board about this high, all the way around. And we had the biggest rink when we were kids, right down the end of the street here. Peter Pelosi, and most people, you don't know who he is, but he was a great hockey player here. He wasn't very big, and he was fast. And where did he live? Right across the street. He skated all year around that rink. And that old guy, he had a great big screen in front of his big window. He'd sit there, drink a beer, and watch us play hockey. He even had a light, one light in the very middle hanging from one end of there so we could play at night. And every year he took them doors down and put them back up again for us. And he flooded it, swept it off for us. And all the kids would be there playing hockey.
Lucky kids.
Yeah, we were all lucky. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then we used to go down to the end of the street here onto the lake here. Because it's a dead end right here on the lake. Clean that off, and because it almost rolls right to the bottom right here, and it'd be a solid. And the kids can play hockey on there. They always played hockey there. Hmm. But now the empty boulevard make out all the time.
Oh.
Don't know why, but they do it. You know, you look at the dam, they got all the sluices open. So there's hardly any water in there anymore. Like in the wintertime, you can't skate there. Even one time, they even bought the Zamboni out here for us to skate on. You know, in the middle out there, I don't know if you don't know that. The city used to bring a Zamboni and clean a big area off there, and the kids used to go, people used to go skating. Then they stopped that. City always stops something.
Having too much fun, you were.
Not really. You know,
there's probably a reason why they have to clear the lake out. We'll have to check that out.
Check that one out.
Questions that people have. Why did you do that?
Yeah. People used to ski on the golf course here. Then they said, oh, you're wrecking the greens. They stopped that. Every time the people go to enjoy themselves, the city comes up and stops you from doing it. I don't know why, but that's our city.
I'm going
to ride skidoos over there. You can't ride skidoos anymore.
Oh, I can imagine. That would horrify them. Over the years that you were doing the job, since you spent so much time in one area, what changes did you see in the technology of the area that you were working in, or did it stay pretty much?
It just stays the same number, except the grain wears out metal fast. Most Italy, that thick metal will be eaten out within a year.
About an inch thick will be
No, it's like this. Mm-hmm. There'll be a big hole in there. And so a few times when the engineers come, they happen to be there, and we show them, you know, they say, oh, geez, look at that, the big hole in there. And they say, how long does that take? We tell them, you know, a year and a half. And they look at us, you know. So one day we call them over, like, almost a year and a half. I said, don't you read the cornflakes where it says got iron? He says, yeah. I said, that's it.
You were doing your bit for fortifying the cereal.
We're doing our bit.
So, did they change the...
Of all the grains that are in the elevators, which one do you think makes the whole... Where's the metal out the first, the fastest? Would it be the wheat, the oats, the durum, flax? Which one do you figure? Barley?
I would just guess wheat.
Wrong. It's the flax.
Is it? And it's so smooth that
That's
I would have thought.
Right. Everybody says it's so smooth, but that will wear the metal out so fast.
Hmm.
Anywhere you go in the elevator, if you see this, like we have these called gumbo, the black tar stuff, a piece of paper. You pick it up with a piece of paper and you stick it on that little hole. You know? And after a while, when it's not busy, they'll fix it. You know, they'll put a liner in there or something, you know? Anywhere you see a lot of that, them things, that's where the flax runs.
Mm.
It's the flax that's wearing that out.
So, and they never found anything that worked better than the,
oh, yeah,
this, now, the metal?
No, yeah, and now they got these little things that they put in that will give you, say you had to change it every 2 years. Now you don't have to change it till maybe 4 years. Because they've got a whole bunch of other stuff that they stick in there, some kind of plastics and stuff now. They tried everything, boy, you know. Anything that came out, they give us something to try, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Try this, try that, you know. But it will wear out, but it gives you an extra year, year and a half, you know, before you have to take the metal out. Grain wears out metal like crazy.
I've got that impression. We had a...
Well, you know the big spouts that you have for loading?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the grain runs on one spot. It runs so long, then they'll turn it over. Then it has to run on the other side. So you get two things on the big spouts. You get like a top and a bottom. You'll never get the sides because you can't do that because that's where the wheels in that are. But you got two sides, you know, and you get a hole, then they can turn it over. So then run on the other side.
So would you also be responsible for that maintenance then, or is somebody else,
no.
The millwright would do that?
Yeah, millwrights. But then in the fall time, this is when they do everything, is in the winter. That's when they help, this is where you got all the helpers come in. You know, they help the millwrights do all the, you do all the taking down, putting up the labor, taking it from the shop to the job, taking it from there to the shop. And they do all the work, the fixing it, and you got to lug it out, lift it up, and they do all the hookups and... You're helping them, but you do all the, you guys are doing all the labor more or less for them.
You mentioned earlier on that at the time that you started working, then there was a period when the silo slipped into the slip.
Yes.
And so that you went to the ships.
Yes.
For two, 3 years?
About two.
So tell us about that experience.
Well, I worked on old buckets. Like now you see the boats, they got all these modern hatches, eh? Well, they have a crane that lifts the hatch up. I wasn't that fortunate. I worked on the ones that have the canvas. You know, some of them had the like metal slides, eh? That they slid open, the metal slides opened. Then they have a canvas that goes on top. But the ones I was on had the wooden things. You had to put the wooden...
Hole covers.
Covers on. Then you had to put the canvas on. Then you had to put these bars around the canvas with wedges to hold it on there. That's the kinds I had.
So were you actually out on the ships, or were you working on the ships to load the grain?
No. On the boat goes, you went with it.
Okay.
You had to go with it. But then, I got smart, and I got to be a fireman. You throw the coal in the furnace. That's a little easier.
So how did you get the job on the ship?
Well, they had a thing on the Simpson Street. The Siemens Union, it used to be on Simpson Street. And they go there and they put your name in. Then you had to go get a whole bunch of stuff. Then you had to go see the government and they take your picture and you had to get a book and they take your fingerprints and all this. And you had, the union had got one, you got one, the FBI got one, and the Mounties got one.
Your security clearance.
Yeah, the security clearance. So when you went into the States, your book was up in the wheelhouse, and they called you up, and they look at your book, boom, 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 sign it. You know, they had they look at your picture, and sign, you know, the match, and so you sign that you're that guy. You know.
Did you hire on to various shipping lines, or did you work for one particular one?
No, I worked three. I worked Canada Steamship, Mohawk, and I forget that other company. Mohawk was the best one, though.
What made it the best?
Well, they had good cooks in that Mohawk line.
Let's get right down to the important things.
That's right. Yeah. They're good cooks. cooks on the Mohawk with bulls, really good.
Who owned the Mohawk line?
Forget the navigation company. Yeah, the Mohawk line.
Out of the States?
No, out of here, because they had the big boats after. They had the Shaughnessy, and they had the two that got the Richardson spot. I forget what the names of them were. But they had great big ones built in Ireland or something that Richardson's bought. It was only small boats at the start, but they bought big boats out. I mean, big ones after. And that Captain Irvin from town here,
mm-hmm.
he was on the Shaughnessy. Then they moved him over onto the two big ones that they had bought. He's only a little guy, but he could handle those big ships for, small little guy.
So describe your first trip on a ship then.
Well, let's see. You know how you see the ships out here in the bay? You know, you see two of them coming from way out there around the corner. You know, you see how big they are. Now, say in November, like now it's coming up, eh? When the, what do you call it, sank? The
Fitzgerald. Edmund Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald sank. Okay, say that you're here and about half a mile away is the other one, another one. And you're both the same size. Great big boats, eh? Would you believe you don't see that boat for 2 minutes? You don't even see his spar for 2 minutes because you're going up and down and there's water in between you. Then all of a sudden, there he is, and down you go again. And you can't explain it to people. You have to be there. That's all you can say, you know. You can talk about it. You ever watch some of the newsreels, you see the ship go, then it comes up. Now this
disappears in the trough of the wave.
No, the front goes down under into the wave.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden it comes back up. That's what happened to the Fitzgerald. Thing was, it went down and it came up. And it went down and up and down. But this particular time of the Fitzgerald, when it went down, the wave there, he came up. But as he was coming up, the next wave came. So he was still in that trough thing. He didn't get up again. Then come the big wave. He didn't ever really come up. He just went right to the bottom.
Mm.
Now everybody says this and that. Even now they're just saying it was that big last tidal wave, whatever they call them, fluke waves, or they got a name for them.
The rogue waves.
Rogue waves. That's what got it, finally. But they said, why didn't they get out of the wheelhouse? The doors in the wheelhouse open outward. How can you open the door with the water? It's like being in a car in the water. You can't open the door till the inside of the car fills up with water. Up to about here, then the door will open. Equal pressure. That's what happened. They didn't get out. And now if they did open the door, they couldn't get out anyway because the water was coming in. You know, you couldn't have got out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter which way it worked.
So when you went on your first voyage on the ship, was it a grain ship?
Yep.
And there. Where did you fill? Do you remember? And where did you go to?
Well, we filled up here in Thunder Bay. And we went to, that was a good boat that went to. That was Lemoyne. The old mine. They made another one after that, but this is the old one. And it was a slow old bucket. It only went about 8 miles an hour, top speed, 8 miles. And we'd go to Kingston and unload in Kingston. And then we'd go to a place for iron ore. Then we'd bring it to Cleveland. Then we came back here. Then we'd make the same run again. This time we wouldn't go to Picton. We'd go somewhere else for coal. And we walked it to Ashtabula. Take the coal off there, and then come here. We had one the steady run. That's all they did, you know. It was either the iron ore or the coal. And then you have an idea how they take the coal on and take the coal off. And they have a crane that when they take the coal off, the crane goes, the bucket goes right in the hole, but the driver is right with the bucket. He's sitting on top of the bucket. It's a solid arm. When he goes down into the hole, he grabs. But after a while, when he goes down, he can turn. Grab this way also, but he has to come back up this way to come up through the hatch. And as soon as he comes up, I guess he just drops it. Just big hopper there, he just drops it. And they have three of them. Okay, the first guy takes, let's say, the last hatch, and the other guy takes out. The last hatch, and this guy takes out the third hatch. The guy in the middle, he does whichever hole he's doing. He does the same, so that when they move, he'll move to the second hatch. He will move over one, and he will move over to the next hatch. when you're done, they're all they're out of because they're big machines, so they all be out of each other's way when they get empty.
And so, also emptying it at the same rate, so that you're not
more or less. Plus, they put bulldozers in the hole, little bulldozers to push the coal towards the hatch, so the guy can grab it. Okay.
Mm. Must have been a dirty job, though, just to say.
It's pretty easy. It wasn't really because the cranes do most of it. Nobody goes in the hole until the very end, to the very end of the job to sweep it
up. But this little bucket that's going in.
Yeah.
It's enclosed then?
Well, the driver? No, he's in like a little room, man, when he goes down and grabs. He's in like a little room. But it was neat to watch them do that. I always wondered how they would do it. And now when they take the grain out of a hole, it's on the system like we have to bring the grain from the bottom of the elevator to the top. It's the same thing with that arm that Richardson has. It's the same idea.
The buckets?
Yeah, the bucket. Okay, you got a hole with three hatches. He'll do this hatch first. Then he'll go over and he'll do, say, the third hatch. Then he'll come back and do the middle one last. Because when he's doing the middle one last, they put these big aluminum things in the hole. Four of them go down into the hole. And the hole on the wall, they got these big rings that they put the tackle block onto. So as you start going down, the guys will keep moving the blocks for the cables. And they got these big aluminum buckets, or big plows, that one, each guy, two guys run two of them. So I run the two, say, from the corners, I go zoom, push the grain to this
center
thing coming down
the leg, buckets
the leg, I push, same idea, and he does his, you're going out, he's coming in, he's going out and you're coming in. It's like a dance.
Like a dance.
It's like a dance, square dance.
Yeah, and if your timing is off, it could create difficulty.
They're just standing on the top of the deck watching. They run like a little box on top of the deck. They just sit there and they just run them back and forth. And they can empty as almost fast as you can load. Almost as fast as you can load, because they do three of them at three holes at a time. And they can almost empty it as fast as you put the grain in there. I was on the boat, and we went to where the prime minister for the French guys from down there.
Baie-Comeau
there. And when we were unloading the wheat at this elevator, the wheat was going into the elevator and out the other side onto a Russian boat. Not only that, the boat that left, he put his load on. We came, and our load went on, and when we're leaving, another big boat came, and his load was also going on that Russian salty. He was taking three to the boat on the other side.
What years would have been the years that you were working on the lakes then?
Right after 58, 59, 60. I it was interesting for me, because being here, then I knew how the rest of the system worked, how the locks work, Like, a boat goes into a lock, right? Now, say you're at the top, the high part of the lock, right? Now you put your cables on the handle guy, and he puts them on. But say you're at the bottom of the lock, coming up the other way. How do you get the cable from your boat to that guy on top?
I should know, because I went into the lock at the bottom, but I can't remember what they did.
They throw a rope down, and you tie your cable on, and up on the top, he's got like a little kind of a winch thing. He hits it with his foot. It's like a wheel, and he puts a little rope. He goes one turn around the wheel, and he puts his foot on the winch, and it just keeps bringing up the thing. Then when the cable comes up, right in front of it is the head that cable has to go on, and it falls right on there automatically. Then when it's going the opposite way, he just reverses the system, puts the other side, and hurts somebody.
So it has to be controlled.
Yeah, it's kind of. Yeah.
So those years, now when did the Seaway open? Was it right in then?
No, not when I was there. No, Seaway wasn't there yet.
Wasn't open yet.
No, 53, I think they started building the Seaway. Something like that. In the 50s, they started building it.
Yeah, I can't recall when it opened.
Yeah, 58?
It opened in 58?
No, I think it was after that,
Was it?
Or could be, because when I sailed, the Seaway wasn't there. We were on the smaller boats, so the Seaway wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
Because the smaller guys were going through yet.
So you would go to Goderich and places like that?
Yeah, Goderich, Ashtabula, Ohio. Up here. Like, the big 1,000-footers they have here?
Mm-hmm.
They can only run on certain Great Lakes. They can't go into Lake Ontario. Can't go into Lake Ontario, because they can't go through the locks. They're too big. They can only go through the lock at Sault Ste. Marie. You got a 1,000-foot lock here. But they can't go down past Sarnia, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
They can't go into Lake Ontario.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, with the increased size of the boats, your job down.
See the little guys there. Even little guys only carried out about 100,000 bushels. These big guys carry a million. Same crew. So you can see the difference.
So you'd be at your job a lot longer row the boat.
Oh, yeah. You know the closed pool four elevator here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Grand Gorge only had four scales. It'd take us, put that million on, it would take us 13, 14 hours. Because we only had four scales, okay? Pool four, the boat comes at 8 o'clock in the morning, and if it's one grade, he would be going out before 5. And they closed that elevator down. How stupid can that management be? They could put over a million bushels on in less than 8 hours. And some dummy says, oh, that elevator's not fast enough or whatever. Because, see, they got two buildings. They had two sets of scales. They had eight scales. They ran twice as fast as any other. Pool four only got the good grades. Only good grain. And they just ran through that thing so fast.
And explosions, they were doing the...
Yeah, but... Even before the explosion, they still had the same system for loading, but they loaded faster because the boats were smaller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 100,000 bushel boats, he'd be gone in about an hour. He'd just stop and go. You know? But the bigger ones, I mean, the million bushel ones, he started 8 and be around, say, 20 to 5, and he would be backing out already full. Yeah.
I think we're going to take just a little break. Can we continue?
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
The best part of being at, I like, because I was a deckhand.
Yes.
And while you're running around the boat painting, and when the boat's on the run, you just paint, you know, paint all over. If it's raining, you paint inside.
I imagine you do a lot of cleaning, too, if you change cargoes, like...
They hose them down. They hose everything down, like, you know, with the big hoses. Here's something maybe you don't know about the bigger ships, like, you know, the big ones that you have now, the 1,000-foot, or the big ones. In the summertime, when it gets real, real hot out, if you ever see any pictures of a boat going along and it's hot out, they're not cleaning. You know what they're doing? They're keeping the ship so it doesn't expand. They're putting cold water on the metal so the ship doesn't expand. You know, because as soon as they leave, they hose it down because there's always dust all over the place. They hose all that dust down. But they're getting, say, out in the lake and they're getting on Superior, they're okay because it's cold. When they get down below there, the guys are hosing all over the place with the hoses. That's so the ship doesn't expand too much to go through a lock.
Hmm.
A lot of people don't know that. They don't think of why they're hosing it down on the top.
You were in, were they coal fired, any of them?
Oh, all of them are coal fired.
Wow.
I was not lucky to get on the big ones. And those big ones, they have tunnels on the side that you walk from the front of the ship to the back under the hatches on each side. And there's three doors, one at each end and one in the middle. And you go through each door and you close it and then you walk. The ones I was on in the fall time, well, here, this has got to be interesting for you. In the fall time, the big waves, like you've seen here, you know, the other day, from the front one to the back one. And on that cable, they had other little ropes hanging down. So many at the front and so many at the back. Now, if you were at the front and you wanted to go back to eat, so you'd look out, you'd watch the waves, how they're hitting the deck and rolling over the deck. So now you got it sort of timed, right? Now you grab that rope and you run over top of the hatches. But if you don't quite make it, you got to sort of climb up the rope until the waves break under your feet. Then come back down and run and get to go where you're going. But you never let go of that rope. Because if the wave hits you, you might go overboard. So you keep holding that rope.
Hatch covers, you mentioned.
The hatches, you know. You got to run over top of them, yeah.
How much do they weigh?
The metal ones here, with the crane, 12 ton. Close, I guess. Because they've got a big crane that lifts them, yeah. About 12 ton. Those are the smartest things of all about those hatches. You know, they got two guys, one on each side, and and he lifts the hatch up, and then he moves it over to where they've got to store it, you know, so you load. Then when you lower the thing down, you take it off, and you go to the next hatch, and they pile the hatches up on top of each other. And to load them, they got like a little wrench. And underneath, they just put the wrench and pull so that it comes loose. Then you take it down. And two guys go around the hatch in less than a minute, the big hatches.
And that's now.
Now,
yeah. What was it like the first hatch covers you ran into?
Oh, they're the wooden ones. That's two guys with boards, putting the boards up.
Then you must have been in good shape.
No, it's very easy. The board isn't heavy, but you need two. You got two hooks, eh? Two little hooks, and the guy's got two hooks, and you lift it up and you put it in place, and you go and get the other one. And you know, when you take them off, you do that. You pile them. The last one go, you know, start in the middle, and then when you go back, you put the first guy here, and then the second.
It all sounds not too bad until you think about doing that at minus 20
right.
degrees and raining.
And it was out, like steam, you know, to thaw them out a little bit. Then you had to try to keep that dry, you know, when you rolled it up so that you could unroll it so it would kind of be flat.
The canvas.
Canvas, yeah. It's one big canvas.
That wouldn't have been too pleasant,
no. Canvases never were pleasant. When they bought that Iron Maiden, boy, everybody was just laughing. And then in the fall time, like underneath the lid, there's like a little rubber under there. So this
like
is,
a gasket?
Yeah, like a big rubber all the way around it. But where you put it on the deck here, it's solid. So in the fall time, they put grease on here. You have a big can of grease, you go along with grease. Then you put thing on that when you put those on, the rubber and the grease squashed. Now no water can get in there, no how. Can't get in there, no how.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine it also prevented the covers from freezing to the deck as well.
Yeah, that would help too. Yeah, it stops them from freezing too. Plus the crane would shake them up anyway. Mm-hmm.
You know, plus you said that you tell us about that job. That couldn't have been an easy job.
The Lemoyne, I shoveled the coal down the Lemoyne. That was the first one. Lemoyne had three guys shoveling coal. They had four boilers. Why? I could never understand that, but they had four boilers. So each guy had four boilers. We had about six fires each. And you throw the coal into the fires. Then you had these great big long metal things that you had to break in to break up the clinkers, they called them. And when the coal gets hot, they sort of melts together. And you put these big bars in and you snap them, you have to break them up. And the first thing, when you learn to shovel coal, the guy explains it to you one time. He says, after that, he says, I won't have to tell you again. You'll get the message that when you put the shovel in the coal, the door is open and you look in there and you want to roughly guess where that coal's going to go. Okay? You get an idea of where you want to throw it. So when you throw it, you don't look. You throw it and you stand back. You've got to stand back. Because if you're down there looking, no more eyelashes. Like they said, we only have to tell you once. You get the message. Because if you don't do the second time, then you really get the message.
And I understand when you're shoveling coal, it was a certain number of hours on, certain number of hours off.
Four on and four off. If you're on the 12 to 4, you go noon hour to 4, midnight to 4, noon hour to 4, midnight to 4.
And then your time's your own.
Yeah, the rest of the time. Where are you going to go? You're out in the middle of the lake.
So what did they do?
Oh, you slept.
And their time off.
Slept and you read and played cards and whatever. We used to and empty holes coming up empty. And it was like some of the holes got water in it to keep the boat down. You know, you have to pump water in to keep it down. Some holes are empty. And the one hole that you always know that's the biggest one that's empty, you do that one last when you're cleaning up. You always do that one last. Because when nobody around, they don't know how long it takes you. You know, they know you're down there doing that. That when you end up quick, we had a ball. And we used to play broom ball in the hole. Because you went down the ladder, right? And a couple of times, one time the mate came and he couldn't figure out why it was taking so long. He looked down there. He came down, he said, what's going on? We said, grab a broom. You know, and he started playing too.
So how did you sign on? Did you have to go to the Seaman's Union Hall?
Seaman Hall, yeah.
And they would give you
all the papers to go to the police, and you had to get photographs, like, you know, your passport photo.
Uh-huh.
You had to get so many of those, and then they took your fingerprints for the FBI and the Mounties, and you had one, and the Union had one.
How did you get assigned to different boats? Like, were you weren't assigned to a boat, and
went? No, when a boat thing came on the board, if nobody wanted that job, and say there's 10 guys there, and nobody wanted that job. So you go to start, you go to take the first one you can grab anyway, you know? So once you got on the one, then after that, you get a little seniority, then you can take anyone you want after. Mm-hmm. Whatever comes up on the board, they have a board, and how many boats. That's why the Simpson Hotel, that when it was there, made a lot of money. because the sailors were right across the street. They just didn't.
Just some, because we're coming up to the end of our tape, just some general questions. Did you ever think about the connection between you and the farmer that grew the wheat?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I see more grain than the farmer will ever see. Guaranteed. Farmer never see a million bushels of grain at one time. I seen a million bushels in the hole at one time. No, they here's another thing I used to do in the elevator. When tourists used to come, you know, first thing I'd ask them, where are they from? And if they're from the prairies, I sort of have a name for them, flatland people. Okay. So when you come to the elevator, we have a big fire escape there. And at the very end, you go out in the fire escape, and especially if there's a boat there, and they can see the boat being loaded, and they can see the shipyards. And say there's four or five of the people there, and they're from, say, Saskatchewan. When I get to the door, I'd walk out on the fire escape. Now, this fire escape's got holes in it. It's got the metal with all the holes there. And there's a railing there. He goes in there in the doorway. He doesn't want to step out. I say, sir, you're going to come out or you're going to stay in there, you know, because there are people behind you. Out of the five, maybe one guy will come. The other people will look out the window, you know. So I talked to them about, you know, the boats, about the dock and how the spouts work and the shipyards are over. Then after that, I take them up on the roof there, and then they get the pictures all over, you know, because they're safe up there because it's huge. So when I come downstairs, the guys will look at me and go, one, you know, only one stepped out.
So it was a contest. How many of this group stepped out?
The guys look and they go, one. But don't forget, these people are not used to 110 feet in the air, and you just walk out.
Now, you didn't think this was unkind.
Who? Me? What? I'm this guy. What? I stepped out. That was kind of a little joke I had going there for tourists.
Did the tourists usually enjoy the tour?
Oh, yeah. Oh, especially because they, you know, like when I'd ask them how big their farm elevator was, eh? And if they said like 15,000, they'd have to fill it up, they filled up this hole. That's just one hole. You know, I said, oh my God, you know. Like each hole that we had, the big ones hold 16 boxcars. At that time, now it's about 10 tankers, I guess, because the tankers are bigger. Mm-hmm. When they built grain growers, the man wanted to put in, I think it was 5,000 bushel scales. Oh my God, that was way back in 1928. I thought he was nuts. The him and the they give him 3,000 bushel scales. If they would have listened to him at the five, he would have been right on the money. He would have took the whole tanker. The tanker would have went into the scale. The next tanker would have went into the garner. Everything would have been perfect. But now they take up a half a tanker. He has to drop it, then bring up the second half after that. But if they would have went when he listened to him at the start, right on the money.
Who was that?
Well, the guy who designed the elevator wanted to go 5,000.
Ah, so they, whoever worked for C.D. Howe, because it was designed by C.D. Howe?
Yeah, but I guess the owners didn't want to go have that big of a scale. Eh? Mm. They only wanted the 3,000 bushel scales. Eh? Like, see, in the morning, when they had the boxcars there, the guys in the morning, they come up and they say, come ahead for the boat day, or even the dumping the boxcars in the house. They dump the first car, it's coming into the scale. Now they blow the horn and tell them it's all up. He shut the scale, push the button, come ahead with the next one, and they all be having coffee, you know? So when the second car came up, he pushed, now, you know, stop it, you know, give you the light when you're still dumping it downstairs anyway into the hopper. Now he'd go out and he'd weigh the first one off and drop that one. He'd weigh the second one off and drop that one. Now this time, you're running that third one up, and he's still sitting there drinking coffee. You dump three cars. They dump about five an hour. You're dumping three, and he hasn't moved in the shop. He's just laying there, and he just pushes a button, and he'll come ahead to the garner, you know. And you come ahead to the garner, and then he makes those two in a hurry, and then, you know, it's a game. He fills up two before he goes out again. You know, he can time them.
He can time it.
Yeah. Well, he's still, because he's got the light. He knows the light. When the light comes, then he has to make a move.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as he's paying attention.
That's right. Yeah. Most of them. Well, Les Green, he could run on six belts in the annex, different grades, different holes, and that's six different cleaners he's running in the downstairs, and he's got six belts running, say, upstairs, different grades, and there was something else. And six sets he had to have, the sets on the distributing floor, and he could sit there and play cards, and he knew where everything was in his brain. He knew where everything was running. You ask him, he'd tell you right away. Boom, 74's running, you know. And other guys, they had little pieces of paper. They had it on his, on their hands and all. They were right there, you know. And Les Green had it on his head.
Smart man.
Yeah. You can remember. They used to play some kind of a card game called the Aces. What the heck was that game called? The Aces were points. The Tens were points. They had a name for it. And he can remember the cards, you know.
He'd be a great bridge player.
Oh, you know, he was good at it, boy. He was smart. He'd say at the end, put that five up. Because you add up the cards on the table and then you took them. You know?
Yeah.
And Les was good at that game. Hmm.
Did you ever consider how what you did contributed to Canada's success as a internationally renowned grain trader? Did you ever see your part as being...
Let me put it this way. When the Liberals were in power, we moved a lot of grain. When the Conservatives were in power, what a mess we had then. They were the worst guys to have for grain. The Liberals... The old days, the Liberals filled up everything with grain. Boxcars and everything. Do you ever see any boxcars on the sidings here? You know, downtown there, on the waterfront, where you have your thing there? Remember all the tracks they took out? They were always filled with grain cars in the old days. You ever see it now? None. They had big sidings down here, down the rock out here, filled up with empty grain cars. You know, full ones, waiting to come in. You don't see that now. Now the order. The order for the week, how many you're supposed to have. You know, even all those big tankers. And then the fall time, they loaded up all the tankers with grain, you know, to keep them on, have dry grain. The ships used to call, take storage loads. They would fill a million bushels in the holds and have it stored for the winter, keep it dry. Conservatives didn't care. I never vote Conservatives, never. Never. They don't care about our country. If they cared about our country, remember Mr. the guy that broke up the airplanes? Diefenbaker.
Dief.
Broke up your airplanes. I always wondered why.
The arrow.
The arrow. Why would he do that? And now I thought, you know, they do stupid things, them Conservatives, boy. I could never understand a government ruining something of the people's stuff. You know, the people own, you know, like hydro, the airplanes and that, you know. Why the government, one guy can say destroy it or sell it. I can never understand how, you know, why the people, like, they can get away with that. Especially if you have a Senate, maybe it's supposed to stop them, but they don't seem to do nothing. I can never understand the politics and all that. Giving it away, you know, or destroying it.
Did you have a question, Ian? I sensed.
Well, you know, you actually got into sort of more of the sort of social end of things. Playing cards, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
Was this part of life in the elevator?
No,
some people have mentioned alcohol as being...
Well, that was way back in the old days.
Yes.
Yeah, the guys drank a little bit sometime, yeah. They drank a little bit sometime, yeah.
We've heard they drank a little bit too. They drank from dawn till dusk. So elevators?
Yeah, different ones, yeah. Not in ours, they didn't do it that way. You know. But we used to have, in the wintertime, we used to have... big dinners. They get up, you know, we make a spaghetti and stuff, big dinners. Especially if it's cold outside. Everybody had to pay $1.50, $2 to eat the spaghetti and that. And
so you had somebody designated as cook then?
Oh, yeah, we had a couple guys who were designated as cooks. And we had big stoves and they cook it up. And a couple times the guys, they had wine with it, you know, a bottle of wine, you have a glass of wine. And one of our bosses, they sent him, he came up and they let him have his for free, you know. And, he said something about what would be good with this would be a glass of wine. And Les Green says, white or red? He says, well, red. And Les Green poured him the glass. He says, you can get the hell out of here. Boss ate and he got out of there. Everybody was having a glass of wine and having a meal. It was okay.
You've talked about the changes and some of the challenges of the work. Are there any you'd like to add? Any changes that occurred, you know, that made a big difference to your work life?
Oh, about this. A lot of the safety stuff was pretty good that they put in. Like the helmets. The guys never used to wear helmets, eh? Which is good that they bought the helmets in because you're always bumping your head getting cut. You know? That was kind of a good idea they bought in. A lot of good safety glasses they bought in, too. They got rid of the glass. about the plastic stuff, mm-hmm. which is a lot better because the glass could break. The plastic is really good. And the safety glasses. They did a lot of good things when they came in. Like, well, everybody had to wear the safety boots. That was another kind of a good thing because you got big metals that you're playing with in the wind, and the millwrights and that, and it falls in your foot.
And dust collection would have come in during your time?
Oh, it was there before I came, but they improved on it now. They got better fans and stuff now, yeah. A lot better. But they eat up a lot of electricity, though, yeah. Like when I was there, you start up a fan, you're going to do something, you start up the fan, you went and did it. Then on the way out, you stop that fan because, why we're running, you're not going to be there no more, right? And then if you have to go way in the back, so you start up one fan, then you keep going to get to the second one, you start up that one, then you did your little thing, then on the way out, you stop the fans again. Now they start them up. First thing in the morning, they run all day and you're not doing nothing down there.
Hmm.
Why did they went into that stupid idea? I can never figure that one out, you know? That wasn't even a smart idea, the guys that came up with that.
Using electricity all day long don't need to. And you can't, and you can hear the fans up here because
you can hear them run. Like this here, this trestle thing here, when you covered all that up with sand after once, that's what it was when I started. Then they had to take all that out of there when the elevator fell over. On both ends, they moved all that sand out of there, and now they built a big concrete trestles that we have there. We have concrete trestles there now.
Yeah. Did you say that it was could have been the pressure of the sand? I can't remember if you said that
helped a little bit. But what made it fall over was they had no pilings. They had just wooden pilings. And the boats going back and forth sucked the sand out. And sucked so much sand out that she just slid in. Now they got steel pilings. Mm. So the sand can't sneak out.
Hmm.
Huh?
When you think back on your career, which was a long one, and sounds like a successful one.
You know these little boats? We'd have three of them at our elevator one time, tied up, waiting to load. Now you can only get one in there. We used to see three of them at one time.
Hmm.
You never see that again.
Yeah. No, for sure.
No.
What are you most proud of in your career when you think back
well,
on it?
Well, I always thought that... I used to ask this one old guy there, have you given everybody in the world a loaf of bread? No, he says, no, not even come close. Then I said the same thing, no, not even close. At one time when we were there, we had a thing on the board. Oh, I don't know what year this was, way back. I'll say in around 1970, that we were running into our 1 billion bushel going through that building. There's a special thing that they wrote up for us. The 1 billion, this week we'll be going to 1 billion bushels of grain. Mm. Imagine a pile that looked like.
Oh. Mm. So you did think about that this grain was going eventually to food,
food
people around
beer,
the world.
Whatever. Well, you can have a whole meal of grain.
Mm-hmm.
The beer is the barley, spaghetti is the wheat, and you can have it in bread, the cookies are bread. Yeah, it's almost a meal and it's all grains. Spaghetti and the only sauce are different, and the beer and then even to the margarine, it's a grain. From the vape seed. So the whole, you almost have a whole meal and it's all grain.
Yeah, and you have your peas and beans too. That would have
peas. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You feed a lot of people with grain. Of course, it's a big product, but you still feed a lot of people down the road. Eh? Then some grains you get alcohol and stuff out of it. Some of them get seven different things. Yeah. Well, some of the grades, different stuff you get out of some of them. They squash up and flax screenings. It's just the screenings. There's a little wee broken pieces of flax and all the dust, and they squash that up. And we ship it like that, flax screenings, and they get the flax and they get the oils and whatever they've got to get out of it. Yeah. Like oil for, I guess, 3-in-1 oil, I don't know what they do with it, but it goes out, and somebody makes money with it.
Not a lot of waste.
That's
over the years they learned
to... Even here, the only thing that we used to throw away here is the straw, burn the straw, and the rocks, and kill the dead mice, and the metals. Like, even the metals that come in. The old days, they never did too much, whether it was ruining the machines.
Mm.
Guys came along and said, geez, enough of this. And they put big magnets. As soon as you dump the car, as soon as the car starts to come in, the big magnet there. We got more tools and nails, boy, than shake a stick at.
Yeah. What was the most unusual find on the magnet?
Oh, we find bars, hammers, and a lot of those socket wrenches, sockets, things. You know? Yeah. And the farmers drop them in the grain, and we get them here. Mm. So we used to tell them, don't throw it in, fellas, because it comes out here.
Yeah. Well, actually, there is a story, and it's supposedly a true one, that a fellow in the prairies dropped his false teeth into his load of grain, and he said, don't worry about it. People in Thunder Bay, at that time probably Port William or Port Arthur, will find them, and sure enough they did, and returned them to him. So
another thing that crazy farmers used to do, they used to go for lunch, I guess, when they loaded the cars, especially the box cars, when we'd open the door and there would be the round thing that they used for to load the car. They took the bar out, and they didn't take the clamp off. The big clamp would be there. And we'd save so many clamps, and then when Stan McKay was here, he would put them in a suitcase or whatever and take them back up to Winnipeg, and they'd send them back on the prairies. I don't know what he did with them, but he'd send them back every once in a while. Like even the sacks that we used to get, we used to have so many sacks, and then we'd send the truck would come and throw them on the truck, and they all went back out west again. Mm. And they all went back to the farmers.
What would come in sacks?
The flax. They had the petition cars.
Oh, okay.
You save a whole pile of
bunch. Oh, and then you would
send the empty sacks.
You would empty the sacks.
Yeah, and send them back out again. Oh. After you got so many piles, they throw them in a truck, and away they went back out west again.
Any vivid memories, stories that you haven't had a chance to tell? That
no, nobody got killed in the elevator when I was there.
Oh, good.
Nobody got killed in our elevator. No. Nobody got hurt. You know, you guys got hurt, but then nobody ever got killed or anything.
Good safety record then.
Good safety record. You sort of everybody sort of watched each other, you know. Like, we have, like, horns and stuff, you know. Like, you're going to do, say you're going to start a belt up, and you ain't too sure if there's anybody there. You give it a little click, and one little, and the belt will go, it'll move a little bit. So then you wait a little bit, and you do it again, you know. So if anybody's there, he sees the belt move, or he hears it go clunk, you know. So after about the third time, you know, he should be away from it, then you can click it in, the way you can go, you know.
It sounds like you had a whole system of communication built on horns and lights.
Right. Once he tells you to come ahead, you come ahead. And then if he wants to shut off, he hits the button, and the light goes off in the basement. The big lights go off. And then you go and you push a button that stops the lights, so he knows that you got the message to shut off. You know, but like the horns go, and then you just push a button that signal him back, I got it, you know. And then you shut off, and he's happy.
We're trying to preserve the history of the grain industry in Thunder Bay, and this project is a big part of that. If we manage to get some kind of center established, what kinds of things do you think should be remembered, commemorated?
If you get enough of the old pictures, I was going to do something for you, but when I phoned the guy, He didn't have them. His friend had them. So he went to get it from his friend, but his friend, whatever he did, he gave it to his sons or something, you know. They had a deck of cards. He had a deck of cards and blast. The whole deck of cards, you know, all the pictures on the cards of the blast. And then when you sort of go to come, I thought, gee, I'll phone Pepe and see about the cards. And if he could have the cards, I was going to photo stack them for you. But he never had them. It was his friend's cards. So when he phoned him, his friend, his sons or something, got him. He didn't know where they are now. But if I could have got them for you, I was going to photo stack them for you, and so you could have all the pictures.
Oh, what? Like, there was a deck of cards put together for?
Yeah, with all the pictures of the bus. He sold them as a thing here in town one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so if you ever talk about it, ask anybody sometimes, do you anything about the cards that they had? You might run into a deck.
Yeah. Wow.
Because I see the deck, you know, I've seen.
Well, if that fellow ever tracks his son down, even if we could borrow them to make a photocopy of it.
That's what I was going to do. Yeah. I thought Pepe owned them. Eh? Mm-hmm. I was going to borrow them and take a photo of that, and then you guys could have the pictures.
Wow.
That's all the pictures I can give you.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
That's great.
That way?
Yeah, yep.
The time went very quickly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful stories.
I had good bosses. We had all grain growers always had good bosses. Eh? Like Murdoch McKay, his father, like Murdoch ended up as the manager, his father, his grandfather and uncle, all the old Scotsmen are all good bosses.
Yeah. Are there other people that you can think of that maybe we should put on our list to interview?
Oh, Murdoch should know, because Murdoch had a good job, because he ran across the country for the grain growers. Like, he was in here. He was the manager from here to, I don't know how far he went, but he was pretty far. I guess all the way to Vancouver, probably, Murdoch went. So he, you know, he come down two or three times a year all the time, you know. We all get on his back, you know. The Murdochs, and their Scotsmen are good to fix something for you. If there was something wrong, you know, and they looked at it, we'll fix it. And they got the millwrights right away to change it to make it go faster and smoother for everybody. You know, Stan McKay was great for that. Stan was one of the better men for that.
Hmm.
I wanted Stan to change the slide. Shit, he may be a whole new spout for the company, you know. It's, you know, why we could play around here for 2 hours emptying this bin, and we can do it in 10 or 15 minutes, you know.
Sure, go ahead. Well, should have kept the same thing with your 10 cents an hour.
Yeah, my 10 cents an hour, yeah.
It's true. Scots are renowned engineers.
Yeah. Oh, we had a few guys that wouldn't do the job because they wouldn't give them that extra 10 cents. You know, let's say I get somebody else. By getting somebody else, now you're taking a chance. What if he doesn't know what's going on? Like, they broke that cable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That was a brand new cable they had just put in. And I kind of laughed. I said, Murdoch, I would have took the air off the brakes first, Murdoch.
Oh, a little bit of stubbornness.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know. But they got to be, you know, they're the bosses, okay.
Yeah.
I used to play a game in the elevator. We had these machines, okay? And Peter Slansky here, he was the main tunnel guy. So I always emptied the machine so he could loaf a bit or go for smoke or whatever. So I said, okay, we got 1 feet screen in there. What are we going to do next, you know? So he'd say, put the broken durum, right? So I'd write it down, broken durum. Then I start taking the bins out. I got 5 bins to take out. Pretty soon somebody will say, what are you going to put in next? I said, well, that's feed screen. And Pete said, broken durum. They said, no, I'll put mixed feed oats in. So I write mixed feed oats, cross out Pete's. And then after a while, another boss come along and said, well, we're going to put maybe mixed feed oats. Is that? No, no. He says, well, we'll put the old tailings in. Okay, old tailings. And then by the time I got done, another guy say, put the 1 feet screen in. You know, the head boss say 1 feet screen. So that's what I do. I came down to Pete. I said, here's how it worked. You said this. Ding said this, Tito said this, and Stan said that. And each time I did this, he says, what the hell is going on? I said, well, I'll tell you what it is. I'm the boss. I'm the boss. I'm the boss. You know, and I just, a little game I played.
And you do it each time?
Every time. I wait till they ask me what they're going to put in. So Pete said this, and no. They change it.
Yeah.
The final
add up how much that is in time.
It's just not time, nothing, because I'm not doing
it. Oh, you were doing, you knew it.
I'm just waiting for it, you know. It's still, you know.
Good thing you didn't do it every time they said it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great interview.
Thank you.